Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is the award-winning poet Martha Collins. Collins was founder of the Creative Writing Program at the University of Massachusetts at Boston and was a professor of creative writing at Oberlin College until 2007. She is the author of many collections of beautiful and complex poetry, including Day Unto Day and Night Unto Night, published by Milkweed Editions, and it's what we'll be discussing on today's show. Collins is the winner of many awards, including three Pushcart Prizes and several fellowships from NEA and the Bunting Institute. I'm talking to Martha Collins by phone from New York. Martha Collins, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
Now, before we start tackling the books, I'm always curious about how writers discover poetry. Was it in your childhood? Tell us how you found it.
There was Robert Louis Stevenson's Child's Garden of Verses when I was very little. But there was also the Bible. I came from a very religious family, and the first grown-up poem I ever heard was the 19th Psalm, which my mother recited to me one night. And that psalm has become the title of the two books that we're going to talk about or become the source of them. There's the thing starts out, "The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament showeth his handiwork. Day unto day uttereth speech, and night unto night showeth knowledge." I didn't know at the time that that was a poem. I thought it was just the Bible, but I thought it was just the most beautiful language I'd ever heard.
Yeah.
And that stayed with me. I didn't seriously start writing poetry until I was in my 30s. I played around with it. I wrote things for school when I was in grade school and high school. But my serious commitment started somewhat later.
Mm-hmm. Well, you certainly have made it an incredible career. I want to talk about the most recent collections just in general, Day Unto Day and Night Unto Night. Very haunting, very beautiful. Tell us about the concept.
The concept, it was actually not exactly a concept when I began. I had just, in 2004, finished a book-length poem that focused on a lynching that my father witnessed in southern Illinois. And I had done a lot of research for that book. It was unlike anything I'd ever written before, and I personally wasn't particularly in it. So when I finished, on the one hand, I didn't really know how to write a short poem anymore, because I've been working on this very long one. And I also found myself, for the first time in some time, thinking about more personal matters. My mother had recently died, and my husband had gone in for serious surgery. And I didn't quite know how to deal with those things, things I might have talked about in shorter poems at an earlier time. And so somehow, in October 2004, I decided I was going to write 7 lines each day for each day of October, which meant I would have a 31-section poem or 31 short poems at the end of the month.
Mm.
And then the next year, I still didn't know how to write a short poem, and so I decided to do it again. And pretty much at the same time, I decided I would keep doing this thing until I had gotten through all 12 months in no particular order at the rate of one per year.
Mm-hmm.
Which meant I would finish in 2015, which in fact I did.
Wow, wow. When you were writing these poems about the months, were you in the month that you were writing about, or were you
absolutely
imagining it?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I was very strict about that. When I was writing October, on October 1st, I wrote number 1. On October 2nd, I wrote number 2.
Mm.
That isn't to say that I didn't go back and work on the poems. In fact, when I was on number 2, I would go back and look at number 1. But I didn't skip a single day during the month, and I didn't really write ahead. I made little notes sometimes at the top of my notebook, but I stuck to one a day. And so October number 1 is October 1st, and so forth through 365 days of doing this.
Wow, what an incredible enterprise, and they're beautiful volumes.
Thank you.
I want to have you read from the first volume, Day Unto Day, and This poem is called Over Time. Tell us a bit about it before you read.
Yeah, as I said, what prompted this was my mother's death and my husband's impending surgery. And so I was thinking about time, over time, and mortality, probably more than I have, certainly more than I ever had. I was even thinking about whatever the soul was, which is probably a word I'd never used in a poem before. And so I didn't know where the poem was going at all, but I wrote my seven lines, and then I would move on. The formal rules for these poems, the 12 of them, varied somewhat over time, but a rule that I often used is the one that applies here, which is that the last word of the first section became the first word of the second section. The only other thing I would say about this, I'm going to read the first six sections. In the fifth section, I was thinking about the moon, and there really was a website on which you could purchase a section of the moon. So that's what the moon shop is. Okay? Overtime, October 2004. 1. Not much less. Slip of a finger, diminished interval, maybe third of 3 or 2. Water mirrors, house with high green door opening out, no steps into pure air. 2. Air pockets, 3 hawks. Cat got the bird, got the cat. Overflown, a habit of flight. Worn cloud on the edge of edge. Wisps, little tongues. 3. Tongues at work. Talk today. She could, did, for an hour or more. My first her who gave me words. Then at the end, before, merely, oh. A moment of more, perhaps. Oh, sweet and blessed could be, oh, my soul. 4. Soul slept, called in sick. Late sun clouds, the lake with clouds. Katie did down to did. Nothing to be done. Little sun, quarter moon. 5. Moon covered, uncovered, covered again, cold. Cold and hot, very in both. Disturbed the sea of tranquility. Distributed by the moon shop. Distributed self in pieces. Oh, my broken. 6. Broken down or out, as in war, or into soon, my own hymn. How much we carry around under our skins, many we were, girls and boys. Now, and then.
Wow, these are great. Were these poems stream of consciousness, or were you being deliberate about what you were trying to convey?
Neither, really. They were very deliberate in that I went very slowly. I'm a very slow writer anyway, and stream is not a word that usually comes to mind. So I would often just work word by word. They're so tiny, and I would work on them for quite a while. But I, at the same time, didn't know where I was going, which is really something that is true when I write poems most of the time. But it was especially true with these poems. I just didn't know. Sometimes I started with an image, sometimes with a piece of language. I knew, for example, in writing that poem that my mother and my husband were going to be central to it. I knew that I was going to be thinking about time. So all of those things were in my head. But I had no idea where I would be going.
Wow. Oh, interesting concept, actually. Now, I want to ask you about this, too, because it's a curious idea. You have translated Vietnamese poetry. And how has that influenced your work? Vietnamese poetry is so different than our Western poems.
Yes, it is. And for a long time, it was very hard for me to say how it had influenced my work. But thinking about it, I've just been translating this last week some Vietnamese poems, or co-translating them. And they're very imagistic, and often the image is not explained. It's just there, and they're very spare. It's partly the nature of the language that they be spare. There's not as much connective tissue in Vietnamese syntax as there is in English. And so I think that these poems in particular were, if not influenced in that kind of way, at least I was in similar territory when I was translating and writing the poems.
Wow. To me, it had a different flavor. It almost sounded like a translation, some of the poems in these books. So I was wondering if you were influenced by a foreign language. Yeah. I want to have you read from the second companion volume. This was Night Unto Night, and the poem is called Up North.
Yeah, this is the first volume came out in 2014, and at that point, even though I had said I was going to write all 12 months, I almost quit. I thought, enough, 6 months is enough. Hmm. And then in 2010, I was a visiting writer at Cornell, and I had a month in Ithaca. And my goodness, I had to do a March poem because I hadn't done a March poem yet. And so this is my Ithaca poem. I'm not going to read very much from this, and I'm going to read a little bit randomly. But it's interesting because if I'd written a March poem in New England, it would have been springy all the way through. But it was Ithaca. And so I'm going to read a couple of wintry sections and then a springy section. And they won't be consecutive. I'll just, the numbers are always the dates. Up North, March 2010. One. Up North is where I think we go. Ghost trees frozen with mist, snow paving the roads, cold as we will be, no roads except into those trees, no road. Eight. Waterfall sculpted itself into waterfall, using cold to mold itself solid and still as if to be forever falling without ever falling. And finally, I should say that all of this sequence is a kind of love poem to my husband, the entire two books. Mm. So here is one. 21, this is spring. Back with my love again, my bird for life. This first spring day with its baby green blades. Why did we squabble about nothing when we are as grass?
Mm. Yeah, these are absolutely beautiful. You know what I was wondering, do you polish these poems, or are they just flowing out of you? How do you take care of final versions?
I have often said that I don't really revise very much. I just work. My metaphor is oil painting, not watercolor so much. That's more just flowing. But I work on a poem until it's done, and I don't think of revision so much as just, it's not polish, it's just getting it somewhere. Mm-hmm. And with these poems, I would quit each day when I felt that I had it. And until then, I wasn't revising, I was just working. And then I would go back the next day, and sometimes I would go back all the way to the beginning because I didn't know how to carry on. But, yeah, I work very hard, but I may be working, I may have the end of the poem, but not the beginning or the middle, or whatever. So it's a constant process for me, and it's not at all just a flow. Except on those wonderful times, on those wonderful days when it is. And one is grateful for those.
Yeah. Do you set out specific times when you have to write, or are you walking along and, ooh, there's a line, I better get to some desk so I can write all this down? How do you work?
Ideally, I work in the morning, but it doesn't always work out that way. It can be snatches of time in the middle of the day. It can be indeed walking around, in which case I will just keep repeating lines, or on rare occasions, I have spoken lines into my phone, sending myself a message. When I was doing these poems, there were days that were so busy that I would find myself at 10 o'clock at night writing them. But
wow.
I always stuck to the practice of each day sometime.
Uh-huh. And did you have to withdraw a lot of the things that you'd written because it didn't fit into the theme? Really?
No, I mean, I was working all the time on each poem. I certainly wrote down things that I didn't keep. But I wasn't trying to fit into the theme. And in fact, one of the things that happened increasingly, even though these had started as very personal poems, increasingly the news of the day, the terrible things that were happening in the world made their way into the poems. Which is not surprising, because after I had finished that poem using research about the lynching my father witnessed, I was at the same time writing a couple of other books that were also focused on race. And so all the time I was writing these two books, I was also writing those books.
Mm.
And so every year I would take out 1 month from whatever else I was working on and do this instead. And what I found was that gradually I couldn't just focus on myself. I had to let in the world that was so much a part of my other poems as well.
If you're just joining us, my guest is poet Martha Collins. Collins has published many volumes of poetry, but we're talking about her latest collections, Day Unto Day and Night Unto Night. You know what I wanted to say, though? These poems are like prayers or meditations to me. Is that what you were trying to convey?
You know, I was conscious of the tradition of meditative poetry from the beginning. And one, in fact, the initial title of this whole project was Daily Meditations, which is the title of the first book of poetry ever published in colonial America by a man named Philip Payne.
Wow.
People don't tend to know that much. It's a book that's very much out of print. But those were meditations on scripture. They were meditations on mortality. And I certainly knew of other better-known poets who did the same kind of thing. So, yes, they were in the tradition of meditation.
Mm-hmm.
And occasionally I was meditating on a scriptural or a liturgical theme. The liturgical year is something that goes throughout this sequence. But often I was meditating on the seasons, the holidays, or the news.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely surfaces. We can see that. We can feel it. I want to have you read again from Night Unto Night. The first part of Leaving Behind. Tell us a bit about it.
Leaving Behind is one of those poems that uses the liturgical year. November 1st is All Saints Day, which moves into All Saints Day, honoring the dead. And of course, this whole sequence began with as a kind of meditation on mortality. The seasons come into this poem, as they do into all the others. There are falling leaves.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of the poems that you'll see where I end has taken on not only personal matters, but also what's going on in the world. So here goes. Leaving Behind, November 2015. One. Open up for clothes out. Soul clothes. Everything has to go. Closing down time. Call them all saints, souls, my own gone ones. Andy, Marcia, Mary Alice, Mary Ann, cloud of all carried out. Two. Outside my window, locust cloth of gold. On the ground, its yellow tabs, linden hearts, sweet gum stars, like cutouts from the same paper napkin ghosts fill a tree near the house where a year ago my friend, rust-colored chrysanthemums, rust-colored door. Three. Door to door, the angel, no, the Lord passed or did not pass. The angel opened the prison door. Doors to pass through, out, or in are millions more than any. In the other story, the Lord said to put a difference between. Four. Between one and another, a gun. At one end, it's a good gun, because at the other is a cell phone, pill bottle, toy, gun, nothing, a Trayvon, Tamir, Dontre, Michael, Laquan, Eric, Rikia, John. Call them out and the others, black and many.
You know, these are beautiful poems, but they seem a little different. You're talking about death and loss, and you don't seem angry like so many poets do. Sylvia Plath comes to mind. You seem to turn to nature instead of feeling some of the anger and terror. Can you talk about that?
I've never thought of myself as exactly a nature poet. But. Mm. When you're writing day by day, you're looking at the world around you, and I was most of the time walking to an office when I was writing these. So the world around me became something that I looked to. But I think I was really trying deliberately not to just express feelings about anger, but to feelings about mortality, but to deal with it, to think about it, to meditate on it, to think deeply about it. Mm-hmm. And it's not that I don't have anger in my poems, but these really were meditations. And it's hard to think of Sylvia Plath as a meditative poet.
Oh, no. But I was thinking about all the death poems that she wrote. What I mean?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's not just death. It's the whole business of mortality. It's not just
the dying.
It's a little bigger than that.
Yeah.
And thinking about time.
Well, I absolutely love the fact that you obviously gave the subject space, more space than some people do. You understand what I mean by that? It's like there's more thought streams in these poems.
Well, I think the fact that I was not writing these long poems as long poems. I was writing them day by day. And so there's a lot in each one. And it makes it actually kind of difficult to read these small sections of them.
Mm-hmm.
But the form itself sort of dictated that I not stop. And so whereas if I'd been writing short poems, which as I said, I couldn't really do at this point, but if I'd been writing short poems, I might have stopped. And instead, the form made me push on.
Mm.
And there were days, mid-month sometimes, when I think, oh my gosh, I can't go on with this. I just can't do this month. I'm going to scrap it and start over. But
yeah. Oh, I'm glad you didn't. I want to have you read the second part of Leaving Behind from Night Unto Night. Can you tell us a little more about this later?
Yeah. This is the last three sections of Leaving Behind, which is the last section of the whole book, of the whole project. These are the, 363rd through 365th days that I did. And so it's a kind of conclusion to the whole thing. There's a bit of an allusion in the very last one to a quite famous poem by Rilke, the line, his line is, you must change your life. And I think that's a reflection of the fact that writing these poems did change my life. Mm. So the last three sections, 28. Last night I woke and found my body held, living for now, a piece of all. Over the grave, the beautiful skeletal, chalice and vase, tangle and dance, the white bones of the birch, its vertical script. Over my bones, this living that is my 29. My life, my living, my being, my loving. My friend, my friends, my one, my love. The huge white moon missing almost nothing. My love in my arms, in my bed again. The Advent candle for earth, for hope. This almost last, this work, these leavings. My blessings, my many, my thanks for these. 30. These days and nights, these lines have changed. You must change. My life, my loving, my one. And now this leading behind, this opening out the spaces between the dark lines of the great unleaved, to where the night is as clear as the day.
That's beautiful, Martha. These are beautiful. I love the way you read them, too. We are almost out of time. Can you give some contact information if people want to get in touch?
Yes. My website is one word, MarthaCollinsPoet.com.
Mm-hmm. Are you, just real quick, we have about a minute left. Are you going to tackle this kind of focused body of work again?
Everything I seem to be tackling these days is a focused body of work, but there are no more days of the year, no more months of the year. So, no, not this kind of thing. I do have a book coming out in the fall that is in memory of my husband, who died just a little over a year after I finished Night and Tonight.
Mm.
And these are poems that I wrote following his death, about his death. The book is called Because What Else Could I Do?
Mm.
And it will be out in the fall from Pittsburgh.
Oh, wow. Well, we will look forward to that. Well, Martha Collins, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a great pleasure to talk to you about these incredible books.
Thank you so much for having me.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega, and we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.